Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm John Carlin, and I currently teach at Kansas State University.
Mike O'Neill, currently president and CEO of the Kansas Chamber of Commerce.
And we got a lot of big things to talk to you guys first, but first, we're going to hear the open.
This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go.
All right, first things first. On this edition of State House Blend, John, Mike, and me are live with an audience at the Celtic Fox in downtown Topeka. So no coffee and donuts tonight, but I believe everybody has enjoyed the Celtic Fox Fair. Joining us, KPR State House reporter Stephen Caranda. He's going to be wandering about and taking questions. And the top guy over there at the KHI News Service, Jim McLean, is here. We'll also be hearing from our friends in the audience here at the Celtic Fox as we go along through the podcast. And as we go along, we want to get above just a back and forth that we have on issues like taxes, school finance, and guns. We want to try and answer the question, Kansas right size or wrong size, just what should government be doing for us? Which is why we have a former governor and a former House Speaker with us, because you need august folks to answer such weighty questions. But since this is State House Blend, we put off the weighty questions for just a few moments while I ask John and Mike my two favorite questions. Tell me about your families and your pets. Mike, we'll start with you.
Married. My wife, Cindy, is currently down in Hutchinson at the Kansas State Fair. She serves on the Kansas State Fair Board and in her spare time lobbies up here in Topeka. Son, Austin, is in grad school at KU and getting his doctorate in behavioral research. I am his favorite subject for that. Daughter, Haley, is an ICU trauma nurse at St. Louis University Hospital in St. Louis. I met my pet-to-be yesterday at Lansing Correctional Facility in the Safe Harbor program. She's a four-month-old lab. She's a blacklet, which means she's a black lab and a chocolate lab combined. And I'll be filling out the adoption papers tomorrow. So excited about that.
Best pet story yet, I think, on State House Blend. John Carlin, your family's in your pet.
My wife, Lynn, works for the provost primarily, although it ends up being about anybody in Anderson Hall at Kansas State University and has for a number of years. She was actually acting head of technology for 3 years. It was supposed to be 6 months. It turned out to be 3 years. The kids are on the East Coast. David in Washington, D.C., Lisa in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey, grandchildren, adopted twin boys from Vietnam with David and his partner, John, live on Capitol Hill. Well, on the assumption that tonight we're going to tell the truth on everything, I've never been much for pets.
A lot to talk about. I want to urge the audience to think about questions and stand up and be part of the conversation. But first, I want to start with my colleague Jim McLean to get the conversation rolling.
I really feel bad just breaking up the chat that we were having here tonight by devolving into the issues. But Mike, I've been thinking about this. First of all, nice jacket.
Yes, you're very handsome tonight.
Yeah, you too.
Wearing the same jacket, which is just a little creepy for me.
The exact same jacket, as luck would have it. Anyway, I was thinking about this, and given the theme of tonight's conversation, right size, wrong size, you were in the speaker's chair when that tax bill passed. And we can talk about the shot of adrenaline and how it's affected the economy if we want to, but my question for you is, in several years prior to that, I heard conservatives in the legislature lamenting how hard it was to cut spending and cut government. It was just, as long as there was money on the table, it was going to be spent. And so I heard a lot of talk in those days about the strategy called starve the beast. To what extent, from your inside information, your knowledge, was the tax bill designed to implement that strategy to force a downsizing in state government?
Well, Jim, I guess at first I might challenge somewhat the premise, because the general idea of getting to a low tax situation is actually to stimulate the economy to the extent that your pie doesn't stay a stagnant size. You actually grow the pie. But in order to have successful tax policy, you're going to also, for the period of time that you're going to have less revenue on the table, you're also going to have to bring spending in line with those revenues. And to that extent, you are downsizing the size of government during that period of time. But I would say that the primary reason for doing the tax reductions was not necessarily to downsize government, but it is a necessary aspect of making that initiative successful.
So quick follow-up, what's the period of time then where we're waiting for the shot of adrenaline to kick in?
It's not a shot of adrenaline, as I think we've found out. And in fact, it's very hard for anybody to have predicted the stagnation nationally, because everybody thought that they would pull out of the recession quicker than they did. And in Kansas, you also had the hit to aviation, the hit to oil and gas, and the hit to commodity prices. And so that is currently what is keeping Kansas from being in a growth mode. We're in a growth mode, but we're not coming out of it as quickly as others. As you see to the south of the border, Oklahoma, which did not do tax reform, they have had month after month after month after month of shortfalls, and they actually have a bigger shortfall than we do. So it's a problem that is actually occurring nationwide, and as I mentioned, we've got three key ingredients to our economy that are suffering right now.
But just to sum up, I mean, the tax bill was primarily designed in your mind to stimulate the economy, but a byproduct of that was to maybe shrink government at least temporarily, and that was an intentional byproduct from the very beginning.
Right, because we've had we had a decade in which we had 580-some% increase in the budget during a period of time when inflation was only about 160% over that period. So we've been spending quite a bit over time relative to inflation. And basically what you're saying is it's better to be in the legislature when you got lots of money, because there's a lot of tax spenders that want to be there to with their hand out to get more funds. And that's hard to argue against. And if you got the funds, you end up spending them. And so there was a period of time there where we had growth in state budgets of over 9%, when in fact inflation was far less than that. But we had the money, so it got spent.
John, what do you think about that? If there's a pot of money, will the state of Kansas spend it? Mike is suggesting that as long as there's money, that everybody spends like there's no tomorrow. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it all depends on what needs to be invested in. And quite frankly, as time goes on, new challenges take place, and they got to be considered. There's quite a few things I need to say, if that's okay. First of all, I'd be interested in knowing who did the original fiscal note on that tax reduction bill. I mean, I had enough experience with my good friend, late Jamie Schwartz, forming LLCs to do a variety of things to know it's simple, easy, and not costly. And how they could possibly have projected on the current number and not assumed everybody was going to become an LLC. And I don't blame legislators or the governor. Somebody didn't do the fiscal note very accurately or couldn't think about it.
Let me just jump in. So you're referring to the LLC, what we now call loophole, which excludes
exemption.
LLC small businesses from state income tax.
That's and had a huge to. Impact on revenue coming into the state, to say the least. On the issue of, you know, right size, I mean, what we're really talking about from my point of view is wisely investing in what's important for the state to do, like support public education, like take care of the roads and the highways. I would say those are two very highly important areas to address. And I personally don't think it should be driven by what's available. It should be driven by what is the wisest investment for the best return. The flaw in the attitude of people who just want to cut taxes is that you still end up paying a lot of taxes. But now, because you're not properly investing at a level of wise return, you end up with, like the road system now, where robbed from KDOT so that you could fill gaps, and we're no longer maintaining our highways. That's not going to work out very well. That's not a tax cut that's going to benefit taxpayers, because at some point those roads are not going to be very good to drive on. And at some point, people are not going to want to invest in Kansas if it becomes a state that doesn't take care of its infrastructure. Same way with public education. If we don't invest at a level that gives people confidence we're funding a quality public education system, people look at leaving, not coming, not investing. And so it's not high or low, it's finding the right spot where we get the right return. And this attitude on the part of too many in the far right is, it's cut, cut, cut. There's never a cut that isn't wise. And those kinds of cuts, in my opinion, are costing the very taxpayers that they claim they're helping. Because when you start losing quality public schools, the quality of the community goes down, property values go down. I mean, more than offsetting what that tax decrease was.
I know Jim well enough that he wants to follow up here, but I have a quick question for Mike. I want you to react to what John just said. Are all cuts good cuts in the government budgets? That's what he's suggesting.
Yeah, you don't want to cut just for the sake of cutting, but we do agree on this. It's the government's got to be right-sized. Fundamentally, I have a philosophy that government, taxpayers and citizens of your state do not exist to support government. Government exists to support the needs of its citizenry. So you got to get that right. It's not a matter of government. You could decide what government needs, and then you go get that from your electorate. You've got to be reasonable about that. On the subject of transportation, there were more funds transferred from the highway plan in the two administrations before this current administration than there have been since.
No. No catcalls.
There have been transfers before. This is not new. Now you shouldn't be doing it just for the sake of cutting. I agree with John on that.
Well, but when you go from 1,200 miles of maintenance budget every year to 200 miles, how can that be called good government or good for the people of Kansas?
I think we have a very good road system.
Well, that gets
but
my question, though.
It will not keep up if we don't maintain it. We have a great system, one we can be very proud of. But if you look at other states that you always know when you get into that state, because you can tell it, if you were asleep, you would know that you have arrived in a state that's never taken care of their infrastructure. You get to that stage, and it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get out. That's what we need as Kansans to avoid. We've had a great system. We need to take care of it. And I don't think you have to be a civil engineer to know that when you go from 1,200 budgeted miles a year to 200, that it's going to be destroyed in just a matter of time.
And Mike, I don't want to keep putting you on the spot, but it does occur to me that you're head of the state's largest business organization. And people are talking to businesses, trying to recruit businesses into Kansas all the time. We've heard forever how important good infrastructure and highways are to that recruitment process. Right. We've also heard how important quality education is. One of the things that always separated Kansas in terms of that competition was, you know, a very high literacy rate, et cetera. So we had good, skilled, knowledgeable workers. So in terms of where we need to be, in terms of supporting the highway system and supporting public education, are we in the right spot right now? Are you making that argument that we're in the sweet spot right now? The sweet spot in terms of our level of support for public education or level of support for infrastructure and highways.
Are we where you were just saying, are we right-sized now?
Are we right-sized now?
Right.
In terms of public education, we have been very generous. When you take a look at our peer states and nationally, we've been very generous. We're probably in the top five in the country in terms of the percentage of our state general budget that goes toward education. So I think we've done very well on the education side. What we need to keep in mind, and where I thought we were the primary subject of this, is just the size of government. Kansas is a fairly small state when you consider all the other states, 2.8 million people. But when you take a look at government employment, for example, per 10,000 of population, we're in the top three or
but
five.
But that's county, state, city, township,
that includes schools and everything.
Right.
And
so it's not state.
Predominantly schools. So I we're way above the national average, way above the national average. Now, I'm basically proud of our schools. I think they're doing a tremendous job with the resources that they have. And we have never, as a business organization, advocated for a reduction in school spending, by the way. We have concerns about the fact that we've only had a 7% increase in enrollment. Our percentage of increase in the numbers of teachers is about double that, but the non-instructional FTEs have grown at over 40%. And so what we would like to see is more of the existing resources that we have targeted toward, call it classroom, call it instruction, and instruction, I think, needs to be more than what the current State Department of Education definition of instruction is, by the way. But I think we need to target those resources. I'm very encouraged by our new Commissioner of Education, Randy Watson, who really wants to look at individualized plans of instruction so that these students, every single student, we look at what their wants and needs are, and then work with business to align the needs of business with the students so that we aren't exporting a lot of our educational talent out of the state.
I want to hear from John on this about the right size of government, but again, no catcalls, but questions are very welcome. John, I want to hear your thought. Are we where are we on the size of government in Kansas? Are we too big? Are we too small? Are we right where we should be?
Well, I think it comes back to an honest analysis of the legitimate needs.
Right.
And then you fund those needs properly. There's no magic formula that says, oh, you know, the amazing thing for me, Mike, is that, and we all know this, you can take statistics and massage them any way you want to come up with what you want. You know, it was very convenient to include things in funding public education that had never been included when we talked about statistics, when you put the transfer of, what was it, CAPERS funds that were no longer part of it. That showed a much better picture than reality out there in the classroom. The other thing I would say is that, you know, you can kick around all the stats. You talk to superintendents, talk to county commissioners, talk to people out there at where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, and dealing with resources, and they'll give you a very different picture of what's going on. And you find very few, you can find them, but very few Republican county commissioners that are thrilled with what state government has done in the last 5 or 6 years. From their point of view, it has not been positive. It's not been constructive. And puts them in a much more difficult position to meet the needs of the people.
So I'm going to ask you again, do you think that we're too big or too small? I mean, we've seen cuts in government.
I don't think you can just say that. No, I think you have to evaluate. I'd say right now we definitely need, however you do it, move money back. The KDOT budget has got to be corrected quickly as realistic. Now, there's no simple way to do it because we're talking about big numbers, huge dollars that are going to have to be put back in. But again, I tell you, when you're only doing 200 miles of maintenance, and it normally was 1,200, just apply that to your house, apply it to any maintenance issue. You let that happen very long, and you got big trouble. So it's going to, you know, it's hard to say, but we've definitely got to restore that. You can play with the statistics all you want, but there's not a feeling that we've funded properly public education. Teachers are leaving. It's harder to fill positions. Colleges of education are advising, or at least given serious consideration, that their students should go someplace else for a job. That's not a set of actions that bodes well for the state of Kansas.
Governor, I want to get underneath this a little bit. Instead of the right size, wrong size thing, we've seen in this election year, if we've seen anything, we've seen that there are large numbers of voters who appear to be disaffected from the current system, the conventional politics of the day. Bernie Sanders supporters on one side of the spectrum, Donald Trump and others on the other side of the spectrum. You hear a lot about the political choices that we have in the current election being ones that nobody is embracing. So if government is serving people correctly, and if people have confidence in government and confidence that their tax dollars are being spent wisely, what do you attribute this feeling of disaffection and disdain for the conventional, the current system? Where does that come from? do you think?
Well, I'll throw another issue out there. I understand the politics of it, but not accepting the Medicaid money was a real mistake for rural hospitals and soon to be rural nursing homes. I mean, it was, you know, it should have been looked at from the standpoint of Kansans are paying income tax to the federal government for other states to accept the program. Our denying that, not taking those revenues, you know, you got a hospital in Independence that now is just rubble. You got many others that are really struggling. It's just a real practical problem. And I tell you, people understand that.
But let me, I want to come at my question again through the issue you just raised. You know, why is it, I mean, on its face, you would think that people would embrace this notion of Medicaid expansion. I think one of the reasons people aren't is because they don't have a lot of confidence that it will be administered well or run well, and they don't think the federal government necessarily can afford it, and they don't think that the federal government will continue to fund it at 90% as the law says. So that gets, I want to get at that issue of why people don't trust their government anymore, and that's one of the reasons for the opposition to that. Not the only one, certainly, but I mean, I want to kind of explore that.
Well, I don't deny what you just said. Yes, there's concern about that, and understandably so. I'm just being practical. I'm just looking at a community that's struggling to hold on to a hospital, and I know enough about a rural area to know you lose that hospital, and that's another step towards losing that whole community. And I just think it's got to be looked at from a practical point of view. And yes, there are people. I know that. I'm not saying it would be a popular move. I'm saying it would be a valuable and positive move for those communities that need those resources to have that hospital be sustained. And it's going to slip over into nursing homes real fast, if not already there in some cases.
I want to get to a question in the audience, but I want Mike to respond very quickly to Medicaid expansion, where you are on this, and do you think that this, it's a bridge too far for government?
Yeah, we're actually very open to discussions on a you know, the naked expansion that the federal government is proposing, but one that is built around more along the models of the Arkansas's, Pennsylvania's, who actually got theirs turned down by CMS, but having a little bit of skin in the game by the patients, but one that's a little bit better designed. The problem, as we understand it in Kansas, is not so much providing services for an expanded population. It's actually the provider reimbursement issue that became acute during Obamacare. So we have reduction in provider reimbursements. We are very sympathetic toward that. One of the ways of getting around that would be the most direct way of getting around that would be to reverse the cuts in the provider reimbursements at the federal level. But the providers understand that if that's not going to happen, then another way of trying to do it is to pull down the dollars from the Medicaid expansion. So it really is a provider reimbursement type of issue, and that's what's causing hospitals like Independence to be challenged, and we are sympathetic to that.
This is your expertise, Jim. Jump in.
Yeah, I just want to be clear, because Mike's right in the sense there are multiple problems here. And when he says provider reimbursement, one of the things that happened is that Medicare, the program for seniors, those reimbursement rates were cut intentionally with the thought that the Medicaid expansion would essentially offset those cuts. And not only that, but some of the deeper cuts in Medicaid expansion were not the result of Obamacare. They were a result of the sequestration and the budget cuts that were forced when there was a standoff in Washington and the government shut down temporarily. That's a big reason, too, for the Medicare reimbursement cuts. So you can't lay all that at the feet of Obamacare.
Got a question, Stephen?
We have former Transportation Secretary Deb Miller here, who has a question. Deb?
Thank you very much. And amazingly, I'm going to ask a question that is not about transportation, because my blood pressure would go up, and it just wouldn't be good for me. But on this issue of right size, downsize, I want to throw something out that I think isn't related to size, but has become a huge concern for me about Kansas state government. And that's basically having the right people. I have seen over the last 8 years, particularly in the Department of Transportation, which I'm particularly familiar with, but through other state agencies I'm familiar with as well, an absolute movement out of state government, either because positions have been lost or the most capable people have left to take other jobs. And I look at a cupboard that feels very bare to me. So it's not just a question of, are we creating the size of government that our state needs, but do we have the capacity? And I'm pretty fearful that, quite frankly, we don't have the capacity, which then continues to create this narrative to the public that we're the gang that can't shoot straight. And I feel like it's just become this negative cycle that no one is addressing sufficiently, and I'd be curious what both of you would say about that.
We'll start with John, and we'll go to you, Mike.
Well, I think politically it's a strategy for the far right to carry out what they really want to do, and that's basically destroy government. Anything they can do to lower the quality, frustrate more people about government not doing the right job, helps them politically to demonstrate government is bad. We don't need those people. I would add to what you said, Deb, in the sense that, one, I totally agree, but it's been in a variety of ways, this change in so that a classified position can suddenly become an unclassified position brings more and more politics and patronage and all the things over many, many years we tried to get away from in a real professional civil service system. In thinking about this, I suppose Andrew Jackson is kind of rolling over and saying, boy, those folks in Kansas, they're getting back to the spoils system and it's going to be great. Well, we worked hard as a country and as a state to professionalize our operation. And it's been a drastic change in public service because of morale issues, because of this shifting to political appointments that, where the administration can appoint whoever they want. Once a classified person leaves, this new one, this squabble recently, now that I kind of forget the details on where they're taking advantage, it's not coming to me, but there are several issues along that line that have been very negative towards morale. And if your point is correct, if the morale is down, if there's vacancies, job not getting done, then it just breeds more resentment out there that government is not doing it, can't deliver, more criticism, more firepower for conservatives to say we got to continue to cut government. And it's just it's a cycle that's out of control. And it's also another reason, I tell people in this election, we're working hard for sanity, but even with success with sanity, it's going to take time. There's a huge, long building program to restore quality. And it's not just about increasing. It's about getting back to the quality and getting back to the level of services that makes the best for the need and for the taxpayer.
All right, two things. I believe that is our first Andrew Jackson reference on State House Blend.
That's a professor coming out.
Yeah, so we appreciate that. And Mike, your thought on the brain drain of state government employees.
Yeah, and I would kind of concur with John. I don't know what the answer is to what the right size is, but I am concerned, and I'll throw statistics out again, but the fact of the matter is for decades we have been ranked very high, and that's not a good thing in the terms of FTE public employees per population. We are very heavy in public sector. We had a decade in which the only growth in employment was in the public sector. We need private sector growth to make the pie bigger. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean firing everybody in state government and outsourcing everything, but there are certainly some efficiencies. My standard definition of what I think good government is that government should be there to do those things that cannot be done or cannot be done as well by individuals. I mean, that's pretty much the Republican platform. I still believe that's very true. And so if you see an expansion in the mission creep or whatever, you need to right size it. And I'm like John. I don't know what that number is, but I don't even think we want to necessarily be below average on FTEs. But being in the top five in terms of the level of government that we're expecting our taxpayers to pay for, I think it's too high.
Don't you think part of that equation though, Mike, is not just that we have all these FTEs, full-time equivalents, but the kind of services that they're providing? So if we're providing more services and needed services to the 2.8 million Kansans that you mentioned, isn't that a good thing?
Well, we're growing government at a time when our population is not growing. So I question the need to keep expanding government when your population base is not growing.
Jim?
Well, I mean, government hasn't been growing in recent years, clearly. But, I mean, I don't think it's a question of numbers so much as it's a question of expertise and capacity and competency. In the sense, we ask government to do lots of things in terms when you privatize things and when you outsource things, it does increase the need for somebody to be watching so that there's some accountability there. And you do have to have the people in state government who are capable watchdogs. And I think one of the concerns that I hear a lot about these days is that people at that level are leaving state government in droves. And again, it's not a numbers question, it's a capacity and a competency question. And you're close enough to state government and you interface with state government all the time. Have you heard that? Or I mean, that is a concern that I hear a lot about periodically.
That talented people are leaving in
droves? Well, not only the talented people, but key people in terms of folks at the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. There was a mass exodus there of a lot of experience fairly recently. And so it's we're kind of losing the people we can't afford to lose is what I hear.
And that
no raises for state employees for years and a lot of other things I think are contributing to that.
And that's been true for quite some time. I mean, every administration, whether it's a one-term administration or a two-term administration, towards the end of that administration, you see good-sized exoduses. Now, I can't quantify, you know, right. How many exoduses? You see a lot of people exiting at the end
Yeah. Stephen's got another question.
We have a question here from Trey.
Yes, thank you. I'm Trey McPherson. I like to think that Kansas is a moderate, common sense state. I think all of us are very smart people, very intelligent. Something that we were that you were just discussing recently about the full-time employees and having the budget, needing to cut taxes in order to save money in order to help the state thrive. Wouldn't it be more prudent to have full-time employees who have less red tape to go through and make the process more efficient and then have more knowledgeable employees? And then on top of that, wouldn't it be even more prudent, if you were looking at cutting or increasing taxes, looking at the economic situation beforehand? Because if you have a bad economy and you cut taxes on firms and on constituents, they're going to keep that money and they're generally not going to spend that money. And so if the economy is good and you have higher taxes, generally people are going to have that money. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that idea of a moderate Kansas and what can be done to have knowledgeable staff and have a tax policy that seems to be thoughtful. Thank you.
Two questions. Is Kansas moderate? Have we moved away from that? And I think I'm hearing a question about whether the tax policy needs to be changed. John, we'll start with you.
I think it would be very hard to make a case that we're moderate when most of the legislation going through the Kansas legislature and being signed by the governor comes from ALEC. And ALEC is not designed or set up to promote or push moderate, sensible legislation. It's designed to strip back government, downsize, privatize about anything that would be in contrast to quality public service, providing the services needed and justified for the citizens.
Mike, conservative, are we a moderate state?
For the moment, conservative, but obviously after three conservative election cycles, this is obviously a more moderate cycle that we're going through. I remember when I first came into the legislature, a gentleman by the name of Carlin was the governor, and in '90, I went to bed on election night being satisfied that I had won re-elect to find out the next morning that the Democrats had taken over the House. So we have swings back and forth. So obviously this last swing is more moderate. What I want to get back to is kind of the question. I want to make sure I'm understanding the question. You're actually maybe talking more of the public sector employees that we were talking about earlier rather than private sector. And I don't really have any fundamental disagreement with that. We as an organization, really not so much involved on the public employee side, but on the private sector side, want to break down barriers that keep people from getting their job done, whether it's building widgets or whether it's providing services or what have you. But we do agree that lower taxes do have a tendency to stimulate your economy and make, rising tide raises all ships, and that's still our philosophy.
Well, Mike, you mentioned the fact that we've had shifts back and forth politically, and that's certainly true, but typically they don't happen for no reason. I'd like to understand from your perspective, you just acknowledged that there seems to be, at least initially in the primary results, a shift back to a more moderate candidates from the conservatives. And what's driving that, do you think, in your mind? And because your organization does not want to see any changes to the tax policy, and do you think that tax policy is what's driving it, or is it education, or is it a combination thereof?
Well, I can't speak for every voter as to what caused them to vote the way they did. We do know what's interesting is when you take a look at our monthly receipts, you've reduced personal income taxes, so you think you'd get less of them. We're actually getting more, and where we're being hurt is on sales tax and on corporate, which again I think is a function of the economy that we are, the economic headwinds that we're having with aviation, ag and oil and gas. And so we now have 20,000 more through 14, 20,000 more new taxpayers to the state who have brought in $1.13 billion of new income, of which $900 million of that is taxable.
New these taxpayers, are new, who are they? Are these,
these are new taxpayers, new Social Security numbers. They didn't change from a C Corp to an LLC. These are brand new taxpayers who have come to the state for whatever reason, whether it's good schools, whether it's good roads, whether it's the tax policy of 2012, this is all happening.
Are they people who own LLCs, many of them? If so,
it's a mixed.
But they're not paying taxes, though.
They're paying taxes. They're not paying taxes on their pass-through income.
Yeah, but they're not paying income taxes. They may be paying sales taxes. If they cross the state line, they may have been buying stuff in Kansas anyway.
There's $1.13 billion in new dollars coming into the state, of which $900 million is taxable. I mean, that's a fact.
I want to get to, there's another question out there, but you look like a man who needs to respond.
Well, Jim was doing a good job. I was just kind of...
Well, just curious.
That's why he makes the big dollars, John.
Letting him go. I mean, on the politics of all this, what I find fascinating, this is not what we're going through in Kansas, just another little shift, and we went this way for a while, now we're going this way. The big difference is there are a lot of Republicans out there that are fed up with what's been going on. That's why we had the change in the August primary and elected some different legislators. All you had to do was say, what do you think about state government in terms of the governor and the legislature? And they're upset. They don't like about the direction. I'm talking about registered Republicans. And so they made some changes. And I think we'll make some more changes in November. But it's not just a trend. I think it's an understanding of the people of Kansas that what we tried did not work. And when you listen nationally, I mean, my local chamber person told me this was about a year ago, going to a national meeting and having a nationally recognized expert in economic development say, don't invest in Kansas. Right now it's the worst place to go. They're doing everything wrong. When you're the joke, late night comics, that's not good. And so I think it's the people of Kansas are saying things have got to be done differently. What was tried did not work. I think most of them say, okay, you tried, that's fine. But when you won't admit it's not working, you won't make any changes, that's when they're frustrated, and the only thing they can do now is vote for different legislative candidates.
Yeah, Stephen, you had a question?
Yes, Sam, we have a question here from Elizabeth.
Good evening. This might be more of a comment, but I'll probably try to dress it up so it's a legitimate question. It seems to me public funding often, if we want to talk about trickle-down economics, it does end up trickling down into private sector jobs. For example, KDOT, I'm assuming every person I see out there in an orange vest, they're not a KDOT employee. They are employed by a private sector company, Kansas Contractors Associations. We see their signs everywhere. Same for the school system. The food coming into the school system, the people putting that out, that's a company like Aramark or Sysco. So I guess I would like to know the chamber's stance on this idea that public funding for public services actually do provide private sector job opportunities.
We definitely agree. In fact, we'd like to see more of it in IT services and transportation, food services, more use of interlocal agreements and co-op. So we actually support that very much.
Mike, I think what she's asking, though, is that when you cut down on the number of miles that KDOT is having maintenance on, that means that some of these contractors are not getting contracts they usually get, which means they're not hiring local people. So when you cut state government, I think what she's suggesting is that you're also cutting private sector jobs sometimes.
And we have very few industries in the state that have guaranteed income. There are very few of our members that are guaranteed from any source whatsoever that they're going to have a job tomorrow. It's all free market competition, and so yes, when you have a downturn in the economy, there's going to be less money for everybody. I don't know of any industry that is entitled or mandated to have a certain amount of money that they can spend on private contractors or even their own contractors, and so it's not an intentional type of thing. What you say is true. If there's less money to spend on private contractors, there's going to be less private contractors.
Well, but this, don't we have to take into consideration that money's been taken from KDOT, and as you say, it's been taken from a lot of administrations, but that's money not going into T-Works and other programs, and that means people are losing jobs.
That's true, and our official position has been to not take the money from KDOT. We have a stated, we have a plank in our legislative agenda to...
But what would you have suggested they do if they hadn't robbed KDOT of billions of dollars?
Reduce spending. We're not going to advocate for a tax increase.
Okay.
We're not going to advocate for a tax increase. We represent Kansas businesses. We're not the KNEA. We're not the Kansas Contractor Association. We represent businesses, and their number one concern is tax policy. They don't want to be taxed more.
Okay, but counter to that, to some degree, is the fact that about 16 communities in this state. Prominent communities, not little bitty rural communities, have their own plans. They don't necessarily go along with your policy.
True.
And they are supportive of reasonable. I'm Manhattan. There's a group over there that meets on a weekly basis, conservative Republican businessmen and a woman debating, trying to, what would they recommend? Because they know we need more revenue for public education, for our universities, and for taking care of our roads. They know we're in trouble, and these are Republicans, business folks, but they have a good head on their shoulder and know that you got to invest to a level if you're going to get the returns to make things really work. That's good for everybody, not just the taxpayer, but the people who need roads, education, et cetera.
I want to wrap up here pretty quick. We're coming up to time, but Jim, I want to get one final.
Well, I'm just trying to track through the conversation, remembering back to where we started, and I'm sure you can feel to Mike O'Neill like he's on the hot seat tonight. But on the other hand, you know, we know what
I'm used to it.
Yeah, and we know what the public mood is, and it is what it is, and this conversation reflects that to some degree. But I really appreciate you being here. But early on in the conversation, you said that the chamber's official position was you were not in favor of cutting funding to schools. You also just said that you're not in favor of reducing funding to KDOT, but you were in favor of the tax cuts and acknowledged that we would have a revenue shortfall over a period of years until the stimulative effect of the tax cut took effect. So given the fact that KDOT spending and education funding, particularly education, is more than half the budget, knowing that there was going to be a downturn in terms of state revenues, what did you think was going to happen? I mean, you can have the official position. We don't want schools cut. We don't want roads cut.
And schools haven't been cut.
Well,
you wouldn't find too many school superintendents or school board members that
but,
would
but
buy
let him
into
explain
that,
his yeah. answer. I mean, there are people who obviously have a different opinion, but why do you say that, Mike?
Kansas Department of Education will confirm that there has not been a reduction. The last reduction in Bay State aid was done under Sebelius and Parkinson.
I think the argument here is that while it may not have been cut, it has not kept up with the costs that school districts have. Wichita, all the ones in Johnson County will all tell you insurance is going up, utilities are going up, they got to give their people some raises, and so it's not keeping up with that. So there's not a cut, nor is it keeping up.
The appropriations have not matched the budget recommendations of the local school districts. I acknowledge that.
Okay.
That does not mean that they've been cut.
John, I saw you lean forward with a purpose.
I don't want Mike to think I disagree with everything he said.
Would it bother you, Mike, if he did?
No. I've known John for years, one of my favorite people. We have not agreed on many things, but I respect him very much.
I want to wrap it up with a question for both of you, and that is...
Another dog question?
I could talk dogs all night
long. Yeah, can we get back to dogs?
Question. Yeah.
Except the way farm guys talk about dogs scares me a little bit. So I don't think I want to go there. I do want to ask you both, though. Over the last few years, we've seen a lack of highway patrol troopers. We've seen a lack of KBI agents. We've seen problems at state hospitals. Whatever you think about school budgets, there are districts that have laid off people, generally not teachers, but have laid off people. And so my roads are not being, in some cases, maintained. So my question, I want to start with you, John. Are there Kansans? Are people being hurt? Have people been hurt?
Well, I think the answer is absolutely yes. I mean, the trooper level out there, there's been a slight increase recently. I mean, recovered some of the decline, I believe.
Yeah, they put about a dozen more on this.
But in some ways, those are the parts of state government that really suffer, you can make a case for, because there's no big constituency to step up and lobby and communicate and push for. I mean, the hospitals, for an example, don't have the constituency that the public schools have. And so they're, in some ways, have had probably a worse situation in many ways to look at. And yes, I mean, we've just cut back services. Mental health, a lot of special areas where we're just back to not doing the quality and the sensible treatment that we had arrived at and demonstrated was so valuable, not just for the individuals that needed those services, but in the total best interest of the state of Kansas. It has been a bad situation, and it's why so many people are upset. You know, it's understandable that people are frustrated, because when they have a situation where somebody in their family, in terms of a hospital, were impacted because of declining services or closing or whatever the service might be, there's pain. Citizens know that. State employees, when they year after year are not respected or given any kind of raise to keep up with inflation, it sends a message that, you know, we no longer care. You're not important, when in fact they are very important in providing the services that are absolutely necessary.
Mike, is there pain? People being hurt in Kansas?
From?
Lack of troopers, lack of KBI agents, roads not being, people being laid off in school districts, problems in the mental, in state hospitals?
I guess I've always been a glass half full guy. I've for the entire time that I've lived in the state, which is all my life, I've been very proud of this state. Under Democrat administrations, under Republican administrations, I'm still very proud of that. And we talk about, I'm concerned about the national speaker that was talking about don't go to Kansas, because a lot of the publications that out-of-state companies look at to determine whether they're going to do a visit or whatever, we rank very high with that. Site Magazine, top five. We have had robust growth in our new member base, mainly people who have either expanded into the state or have come into the state anew. We have a lot to be proud of in the state, and we're happy to talk about all the good things that are going on in the state. It pains us to hear all the people who think that things are going down the toilet. And if you talk about that enough, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So you think that's not reality? I mean, do you think the public perception and the reason we see the governor's population or unfavorable rate so high and what we saw in the primary election, that the public is simply misunderstanding what's happening?
No, not necessarily, but you've got a lot of things going on at the national level. You've got a lot of anti-incumbency at the national level, the distrust in state government, local government, federal government. People want something different. So there is that factor. There is every single day. The media hates this administration. It's very clear that they do, and they spend a lot of ink, a lot of column inches to make sure that this administration is not going to be successful. I think that's a shame because it denigrates our state. I think criticism is good. It's healthy. But to spend day after day after day just trying to make things as bad as they possibly can for political gain, I think is wrong.
So I've heard this from the governor. I hear you say it now. You think that there's a story, a success story, that's simply being ignored or not told.
I think my criticism of the administration right now is that they're doing a poor job of telling the story. Because what we see when we go out and talk to prospects, talk to members, what they're concerned about. The good news is we got a low unemployment rate. Bad news is we got a low unemployment rate. We're getting to a point where we are almost virtually at full employment. We've got employers out there ready to hire, and we have at both ends of the spectrum a lack of employability skills by some of the individuals that come in to apply, and then we do need help with the STEM at the high end. And so we're working very closely with Blake Flanders, with Regents, and Randy Watson, with Kansas Department of Education, to align the needs, those openings, those needs, with school curriculum, because we do want a trained workforce, and there are jobs, but we have a very low unemployment rate.
But you're not going to have a trained workforce unless you're willing to invest in a system to educate and train them. I mean, it's not going to happen. It's not that complicated. And I would say respectfully, and I would say, Mike, until you got your job with the chamber and were paid by somebody else, you and I weren't that far apart.
I can't go. Yes, Mike, go ahead.
He's a little different since he spent so much time in D.C., but we're glad to have him back.
All right, we're going to leave it there. John Carlin and Mike O'Neill, please thank them.
Thank you, John. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Stay right here. Thanks also to Stephen. Stephen, where are you? Oh, there you are. Stephen Caranda from Kansas Public Radio. Thank you. Jim McLean.
Great time, Sam. Thanks.
You elevate this podcast. You know I mean it. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
Now, normally with two guests, stay right here. Normally
Uh-oh.
With two guests,
oh, that's right.
We ask you both for your song recommendation for our walk-off music. Normally, I am I take superdelegate status, and I make the pick myself. But I'm going to ask the audience tonight to pick the two songs. Please do it on the basis of your music taste, not what your politics are. So we're going to hear first from John. What was your song choice to walk off?
I thought they were supposed to guess what mine was.
No, that's a different game show. That's a whole different podcast.
Well,
but I like that idea, though.
I got that email with that question, and I didn't know quite what to do with it because I don't follow music at all. I couldn't think of a single song that...
You're also not the first one to tell us that.
But I do have a favorite movie. And so my answer was the theme song for Sound of Music, but I didn't know what the song was.
No pet, well, no favorite
yeah.
song. Okay.
Luckily, we have top men working on that, so we were able to find that.
Okay.
We had top men working on that. Mike O'Neill, what was your song?
It's a song called Loadout by Jackson Browne.
Jackson Browne. All right, Jackson Browne. Sound of Music.
Thank
Holy
you.
Crap, boy, I have to say, on a list of 1,000 things, I wouldn't have thought that. Looks like we're going out with the Sound of Music. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp and helped tonight from Mike Russo and Amy Jeffries. Are you Twitter fans? If you're Twitter fans, you can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff, and my co-host Brian Ellison, who keeps track of the Michigas over there in Missouri, he's at PTS Brian. One other thing, Brian and I are kind of splitting up, so to hear those Missouri episodes, you'll need to go to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe to State House Blend Missouri. You don't have to do anything else to keep the Kansas episodes. I'm Sam Zeff. Thanks all for being here. I'll see you around the radio.